right, welcome back. This is the Fast Five. It is the first Fast Five of 2019 for OmniTalk. We are excited because today we are podcasting live right from the Mall of America, right in the center of the new Four Post. Now, Four Post, for those of you that don't remember, back in November, we wrote a piece about this new concept. But Four Post is a new retail concept that brings people and brands together through community and experiences. The company democratizes the traditional department store experience for local, emerging, and digitally native brands and leverages technology to provide brands with tools and resources to expand their business. So we're here, there, it's Thursday, it's 12 o'clock, people are shopping all around us, there's music going on. I'm here, of course, as always, with Carter and Anne.
Hello.
It is so good to be here. It's fun to actually be in the middle of something that we've written and talked so much about, and yeah, it's a ton of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's Minneapolis Theater, right?
Of course.
So how have you guys been? It's been a couple weeks. Like, we haven't probably done this, what is it, 3 now, 4 weeks? We took a little holiday break. What's been going on? Listeners want to know. Inquiring minds want to know.
Lots of shopping happened and family time. It was good. It was a good holiday. What did you guys do?
I got to stay here in Minneapolis, which was really nice. We have a ton of family here in town, and obviously we visited Mall of America on Black Friday, which seems like, that seems like yesterday, but realistically, I mean, it was Thanksgiving now, which is 2 months ago. No, it's not that bad.
Well, close.
It's a long time ago. So, yeah, it's been fun. Obviously, busy schedule, some travel, but yeah, happy to be back. Happy to be in the hometown mall here.
Yeah, me too. It was pretty uneventful for me. We stuck around town, the wife and I, with the kids. No family in town, so not all of us got out to Las Vegas like you, Anne.
Oh, yeah, I did go to Vegas. I forgot about that.
Most people forget about that experience if they do it right. So it sounds like you did.
Yeah, it did. Carter, you were just in Vegas.
Yeah, we were at CES, and we're going to actually talk about that here in a little bit. But yeah, my eyes are a little heavy, but I'm here with a cup of coffee in hand. So yeah, excited to be back home.
My favorite part was Anne said it was a good holiday for everybody. Well, according to today's news, not if you were Macy's.
Right. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, or Jeff Bezos. Yeah,
sounds like cut deep, Anne.
Like
ouch.
Some marital woes on that front.
So, ouch.
Yes, good call. Good call. We'll probably save the Macy's story to next week, but it has inspired a creative thought in the mind of physical retail is not dead, but department stores may be. And that's why it's interesting that we are in Four Post right here today.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, you guys want to get to the news?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start it off. Headline number one, Kroger and Microsoft are planning to test a futuristic grocery store. So I don't know if you guys saw the news this week, but Bloomberg, via the awesome reporter that is Matthew Boyle, said this week that Kroger has remodeled two stores, one in Seattle, and I think, Anne, where's the other one?
Near
Kroger's headquarters. Mm-hmm. In partnership with Microsoft to test out new digital shelving features. The shelves will show ads and price changes, and a network of sensors will also help to keep track of products and speed shoppers through the aisles. The partnership is going to help Kroger keep pace with Amazon, and of course, it also helps Microsoft in their ever-increasing importance of their cloud business. Kroger may even have plans to sell the technology as a retail as a service component, also a core function of potentially what happens here at Four Post. So it sounds like it even works in tandem with consumers and Kroger's Scan and Go mobile applications as well. So that's something we've been a big fan of. So I'm pretty pumped about this. I'm excited to see Kroger partner with Microsoft to do something a little bit different, something that plays in the game of Scan and Go. We're basically letting the consumers come into the store, use it as a mobile phone, interact with products the way here they want to. Mm-hmm. I give them a lot of credit for this. This is a cool headline.
Why don't you go ahead first? I have some technology things I want to talk about that they're implementing, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think that I'm most excited to see what the ripple effect looks like from this, and if Kroger truly is going to license the software platform to other grocers, what that means for the independent smaller grocery business. McKinsey just put out a study, I think yesterday, saying that, you know, grocers who aren't thinking about future retail, future technology implementations into their stores are going to go away, and they stand to lose like $700 billion against other channels. And so I think that this is a key moment, a defining moment for grocery. And if they are truly able to, Kroger, you know, provide this platform for other grocers, it could make or break their business. So I'm interested to see how this really can be lifted and landed into other small grocery chains. And if Kroger is using this as a way to maybe take equity in other grocery companies by providing this platform.
Yeah, that's a $64,000 question. Carter, I'm curious what you think, but when you start talking digital, that's the one misgiving I have about this. When you start talking about, there's two things actually. When you start talking about digital shelving being the first and foremost piece of this as the new experience, that to me gets a little tricky. So can you actually figure out a platform that can scale when that's the componentry? I think that's an interesting question. Yeah. Curious what your take is.
Well, it's expensive. So the prototype,
sure.
the prototypes they had, they used some technology we've looked into before, you know, small LED or at least LCD screen strips across all of the of the different things. And, you know, they talk about, one of my favorite things, there was a line in the article about how you can pick out your emoji. So imagine like picking out your Monopoly piece, basically.
Like they said, it could be a banana.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, they use it. Yeah, it's like, ooh, a banana.
Who's going to do that?
Point being is that then, you know, you can look for the banana wherever you go throughout the store and you can go get it.
So many avocados. What are all the millennials
I think
do.
Yeah right different shades of ripeness is what it's going to be point being that it's so expensive to put those things into place unless you can find a you know, and if we're going to think that every little mom and pop grocery store is going to adopt this, it's probably not the case. And here's the other thing: if you're actually going through the mall and looking at commodities on the shelf looking for those emojis, like, why are you doing it yourself? And we'll talk a little bit about that from like a CES standpoint, what we saw out there, but like, I get it for like fresh fruit and vegetables, maybe we focus on that experience, but at the end of the day, you're spending a ton of money per square foot of shelving or for linear foot of shelving for really, it depends on what kind of value you're bringing.
Well, and they talk about all the robots that they're planning on implementing to help with increasing the speed of picking and packing. But what does the like symbiotic relationship of humans and robots start to look like in these stores?
Like, yeah, although let's make sure we're saying like that's more of like a different story, right? Or are you thinking that that's where this is going?
I'm saying like that's where this is going. They talk about how there's light indicators on the shelves that Kroger will be implementing to help speed picking and packing, and I think there's no doubt that robots will be involved in picking and packing alongside humans. Mm-hmm. And how does that interaction work? And is it a shopping experience that people are going to want, or does everything just go the way of picking and packing and robots kind of in micro warehousing and things like that?
Well, I think, and I think you guys are bringing up the bigger points here, which is, you know, and this was my second misgiving too, which is it's still a Kroger. It's still something you're bolting into the traditional Kroger experience versus what is the holistic new experience design of grocery that solves the problems that are endemic to what shoppers have, right?
Right.
Like what is finding what I need on a shelf with a banana that flashes in front of my eyes, is that really my problem? Or do I not want to stand in line? Do I not want to wait at the deli counter? You know, those types of things. Do I want to pick up my products in a different way? I'd love to see that explored versus that's where I applaud them for the experimentation. I think that's cool because not all these companies are doing that, but I'd love to see them still take it a step further and think about it in that way.
I know we have to move on, but I think the point is there that they have huge store footprints that they've invested so much money in.
Right.
And so to say that we're just going to eliminate 80% of the store and just like bring the experience that like shoppers kind of expect from today, like you have to do something with it. And I worry that they're retrofitting that kind of, you know, weight that they have to carry with technology like this simply because they know they have to account for it.
And that's always, I know we have to move on too, but that's always the answer. Is like, we carry this weight with us, so we have to figure out what to do with the weight. But meanwhile, somebody else does figure out how to do it better in a smaller footprint and makes that weight actually just like a completely moot point. That's what's so interesting about all this. But anyway, we digress. And
speaking of
headline number two,
things in a smaller footprint and doing it well, let's talk about Amazon Go and the news this week that they could reach over $4 billion in revenue in the next 2 years. So Recode reported this week that the study that RBC Capital Markets did suggesting that Amazon's first Go stores, so just the 3,000 stores that they're planning for the next 3 years, will bring in about 50% more revenue than the traditional convenience stores. And they believe that, you know, the typical order size, the RBC analysts came in, they said that a typical order size they believe is around $10. And so that, and each store averages about 550 visitors per day. So they're estimating that the average Amazon Go store generates between $1.5 and $2 million per year. And if that Bloomberg report is correct, the 3,000 stores by 2020, that means that Amazon Go, just this launch of Amazon Go, could generate $4.5 billion in revenue in just 3 years. And that's not anything beyond Amazon Go as we know it currently. That's, you know, leveraging these similar size footprints. Just for some background info, the National Association of Convenience Stores, NACS, they estimate...
What a great name.
That's a great acronym.
They estimate that, you know, a traditional convenience store does just over $1 million in revenue per year. And as I was kind of going into the NACS page and really figuring out more about convenience markets and how they're thinking about this and how this is going to affect them, I want to ask you guys a question.
Okay.
How many cool. Amazon-related topics do you think are on the agenda currently for the NACS major giant conference this fall?
Carter?
I don't know. I don't even know a good number. 10?
Or even like, yeah, five? Like what percentage of the conference is Amazon-related?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I got to think it's a high percentage, like probably 80, 90%.
Well, you're wrong. It's zero.
Are you
serious? There is not one Amazon mention on the entire agenda for the NACS conference.
Oh, my God. Brutal. When is that conference?
It's in October of this year. And they do have a tech center or education component.
Right.
Amazon isn't mentioned once in that entire agenda, which to me is scary and reminds me of the IRCE conference that we went to last summer where, you know, now Amazon is exploding. That looming Amazon presence is exploding at that conference.
Right.
And I'm shocked that there isn't more
happening there.
Speaking directly to how convenience stores are going to have to be competitive with this, with the rate that which Amazon.
Well, hopefully they're listening because they've got 9 months, 10 months to get some content out there. God knows you can make some content faster than that.
We could put together some.
Yeah, happy to help. But Carter, what do you think of this story? Like, what's your take on this?
I mean, the basket size, I think, is the most interesting thing to me. My Amazon Go experiences really showed that you are mindlessly just grabbing what you really want instead of trying to compare pricing all the time. And I think that leads to larger basket size, especially when you're in affluent areas where price, you know, isn't at the top of the list. It's more of fulfilling the need or fulfilling the want of the current situation. So instead of maybe just getting a sandwich for lunch, it's like, well, you get a sandwich, a bag of chips, a drink, and, you know, the sunscreen you need for the weekend. You know, you get all of that without even thinking about it, and realistically, I think a large portion of the demographic that is shopping there never actually sees the price of what they just purchased.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. And if it's in the bottom of your building, like these are based on stats from the RBC analysts. They're not based on the consumer that's living and working in these buildings where the Amazon Go is really the street level retailer. Plus, they don't include any liquor or alcohol sales, which, you know, they're doing in some of the Seattle stores and haven't deployed throughout their chain
yet.
Right.
That's an interesting point, you guys. I didn't think about that before, but I mean, you're right. Like the Amazon probably in the Amazon Go has a higher willingness to pay too than in your average convenience store. One, because of the demographic, and two, frankly, like we've talked about, the experience is quite honestly better. Like it's more yuppified. It's just more beautiful. It's more intriguing and inviting.
Yuppified.
It's, you know, it's in Webster's. I think.
How millennial are you?
Right. I'm super not millennial. But it's funny because. I don't think I've ever talked to you guys about this or to the listeners, but every day, every morning, basically, the Forbes contributors kind of go around on email and talk about different things that they're seeing out in the media. And this one's interesting. I won't name names, but essentially there's been a lot of points raised about how they don't believe these statistics. Like, what time was this studied? You know, these are the first stores. They're kind of like tourist attractions, too. People are still going to them a lot. Like, should we really believe this? And I am more inclined to believe it than not to believe it. I think, for one, what you say, like, there's still a high willingness to pay. I think they probably are getting more convenience store traffic. Because, like, when was the last time you really went to a convenience store other than to get gas or maybe pick something up? It's not something that's habitual, but when you start putting it at the base of your work, in your apartment building, I think that creates more traffic than what a typical $1 million convenience store gets. And then Ann brought the point up, too, but as well, like, it's just Amazon Go as of now. As you know it. And when has Amazon just stood pat in what they are conceptually? So God knows what else can be added into this with that same technological backbone over time. So it makes me think, if these are the statistics first out of the get-go, man, these could only grow more. Sure, it'll get dampered by more locations, but I don't know. I'm still inclined to believe this, and I think that's a huge chunk of business, and there's a huge chunk of business out there. So
totally.
Yeah, NACS, let's get some content.
Yeah.
Carter, you want to talk about CES?
Yeah, so I just got
headline
back last night
three.
From CES. So, you know, the conference is still going on. It's day three today. And CES is always a ton of fun. Whether you're in a retail mindset, an advertising mindset, a marketer mindset, whatever it might be, CES is a ton of fun. I won't get into any of the high-level stuff. I think you've read headlines. Google is winning in terms of voice assistant, bringing AI into the home. And I got to go on the Google Mogul roller coaster that they built in the middle of the Las Vegas Convention Center parking lot, which was a ton of fun. But from a retail standpoint, the coolest thing I saw, and I sent Ann and Chris a video of this actually when I was out there, I Am Robotics, who just closed, you know, $2 million worth of funding, has a robot that's called I Am Swift, and it's a pick-and-pack robot that is specifically built for traditional retail environments. So I know we've talked about robots in the past. You know, Amazon's got all the robots, and, you know, some of the grocery chains we've talked about before have the robot specifically built. But this robot is specifically designed to go in, whether it's in the evening or to coexist with shoppers, and it uses a vacuum arm. So it's one of the fastest hydraulic robots around, and it can pick up to 30 pounds from the shelf. So you can imagine a fleet of these things actually going through the store, picking and packing product that the consumers maybe purchased throughout the day without any actual human involvement within it at all. And they had one running in the middle of the convention center. It was absolutely amazing. It was really fast, and it was really cool. So
yeah, we have to put this video out there, but it looks like a robot aardvark.
Yeah, yeah. It's, like, it's like a big arm. Goes,
or like that guy in Star Wars. Do you remember that? But yeah.
It's... I have a logistics question.
Yeah, totally.
What kind of products were they picking when they were sampling? Because my mind immediately goes to, if they're putting a soft boxed product on the bottom and then they go put like my Tide on top of it, is it picking and packing in an order based on like assumed weight, or did they say that?
Yeah, so, and I've got to make my numbers right. The vacuum arm holds 15 pounds, not 30, but you can imagine it's still a pretty significant amount. And I think the interesting thing is they sell a technology platform alongside of these robots, obviously, and you can imagine the customization that can be put into that. So if you say, hey, go pick this based on weight, or go pick this based on whatever, you're probably going to have a mix of the most, let's say, efficient route.
Right.
With the still ability to weight things, no pun intended, weight things based on their actual physical weight or packaging. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so cool about the arm is, you know, it's a vacuum arm. Think about the suction ice cream machines,
right?
So you're able to pick anything from, you know, in the demo they were doing shampoo, and like it was basically a Walgreens wall that the thing was just cruising down, and the guy there is like, you want it to pick you something? And he's like, and the robot cruises around and grabs you like a thing of shampoo or whatever it might be. So that was one of the coolest things I saw there. CES is always fun to see kind of what's new and next. A lot of talk about a lot of buzzwords, but from retail standpoint, I'm super excited to see this kind of stuff.
So in your mind, this is kind of flash forward ahead. This is almost a different way to do Instacart, with say third-party people. Instead of having third-party people come in, you can now have robotics come in, pick everything off, get it ready for fulfillment, ship it out quickly.
Yeah, and it's not even, they have deployment
or
already
even
moving.
Own,
right?
Even your own employees.
Yeah, so the idea is that your employees, instead of hiring a team of 30 employees to cruise and try to fulfill your e-commerce orders overnight,
or somebody else,
you deploy 20 of these things and you have two people there who's programming and potentially just finishing off the packaging at the door, and you can kind of eliminate a lot of that issue.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, we'll definitely get that video out there because it's pretty interesting to check. Out. All right, Anne, I know this next one's near and dear to your heart because I know it's also one of your favorite how millennial are you questions.
Yes, it is. So Zola, the direct-to-consumer wedding registry company, has entered the physical retail realm. They are opening a store in New York. They're a 5-year-old registry startup, and the store will be a pop-up from January 3rd to April 15th, which I learned in my research is engagement season. Preceded by breakup season.
So, just in case you're
wondering, I'm looking for Match.com to start a pop-up retail experience sometime around next December.
I got a whole new retail concept idea.
I know.
Bonbons and ice cream. I don't know. Like, what
apparently,
is it?
Breakup season is right before engagement season, which is typically from November all the way through February for those romantics who get engaged on Valentine's Day.
That's hilarious.
But this location will allow recently engaged couples to come and search and touch and feel. That the founder really wanted people to be able to, you know, touch and feel these objects that they were registering for. That's the demand that they were getting from their customers. And they can make 3D cake toppers of themselves. I mean,
who doesn't?
The possibilities are endless in this space. And all coming off of $100 million in venture capital that they've raised over the last year. So I'm curious how this is going to play out. I think there's still people registering for physical gifts, but I'm curious to see if this is still a trend that we'll see in the next 5 years as people are really moving more towards experiential type gifts, which Zola does allow you to do or to give on their site. But I'm curious if there's still going to need to be a physical presence for registry. I don't know about you guys. What do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think if you look at traditional retailers, go so hard into the experience for registering. Yeah. You know, we just did baby registry at Target. You get a gift when you get there, and then you get the scanner thing, or you can use the app. And they've invested so much into that experience. You know, I think this kind of cut the crap, for lack of better terms, of what a standard traditional retail store is full of, and just went right down to, say, you know, here's 90% and it's kind of more female focused, and here's the 10% of the three things that as the guys are allowed to register for, which is usually the Apple TV and some Hue light bulbs. Heard from a friend. And and I think it really just dives into what that experience these couples want and need. And so why would you go to a big box store when you go to the Zola pop-up that has everything you want in a perfect way?
Yeah,
I'd be having run home furnished this category essentially for Target, both in stores and online. If I'm those guys, I'm scared of this. Like, I really am. And I'm scared of this in general if I'm in an event-based businesses, right? Because there's still something to this. Like, Ann, you mentioned, like, yeah, people want experience. But at the end of the day, like, most people get married, you're younger, you haven't outfitted your house with all the wares that you need. And somehow you kind of want to acquire those, or it's still mm-hmm. a portion. And to Carter's point, these are still big businesses for people like the Bed Bath & Beyonds of the world, the Macy's, the Targets, Walmarts. And so now you're saying, okay, during this period of time where all that activity is happening, instead of me having to devote all my shelf space year round, mm-hmm. I'm now going to create something around that event. And I have a good buddy, Jeff Butler, who talks about how most things in life are triggered by events. And I think he's right. Like, you're seeing this with Dormify around mm-hmm. back to college, have some experience there too, but you can do this around there. You're seeing it with Halloween pop-ups. You see it with holiday pop-up stores. They can all start to take these chunks out of the businesses. And I think specifically for registry, when it's like, hey, we still don't know what we want to get as a couple as we're outfitting the house. What's the best, most efficient way, which millennials are all about efficiency, what's the most efficient way to go see, live that, and get the help that I know that I can get that probably might be better than in it some of the stores we've mentioned, and do it in a really effective way. So I don't know. I'm really interested to watch how this plays out, because I think you're going to see more of this around event-based merchandising as the years progress.
What, one final thing.
Yeah.
How does this change when we look at the average age of marriage going above 30?
Mm-hmm.
When you probably had a nice apartment, especially in New York, right?
Yep.
You probably had a nice Manhattan apartment that is pretty well outfitted because you're working at finance, you're working at Goldman, making a cool $150,000 a year. Like, you're not looking for plates, you know. Now, I'm talking about a very small percentage of the United States, so, like, I have to be careful with that.
Yep.
But I think in general, millennials are getting married later. How does the mix of products change within experiences like that? And does it go more experience-based? And does that footprint have as much weight as we might have thought it would 20 years ago?
And it's not just couples anymore either. I think you look at, like, Amazon wish list too. You know, like, registry is moving into other categories, like Chris mentioned. I mean, into the college dorm experience. I think people are starting to use more registry-based sites for gifting across the board. So how does that translate into a physical experience? Is that necessary? We'll have to see.
Well, Ann and I talked about this morning. I think what you're seeing, too, in the marketplace that you guys are hitting on is the word stores is not just about stores of inventory anymore. It's also about popping up locations or building retail locations that are also stores of experiences and services. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can start to play some of this in to hit at some of those, you know, demographic divides you're talking about. Even as we're sitting here, I'm thinking about, God, I want to do this with toys, like in November somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, what is this with toys?
Somewhere.
Anyway. All right, headline number 5. So we'll get you out of here on this. So this happened actually just right before the close of the year, but I think this is an important story, so we're bringing it up again. It's Amazon. It's reported that Amazon has plans to add more Whole Foods stores to the national landscape. So essentially, Amazon plans to expand Whole Foods' footprint in order to bring more customers closer to its two-hour delivery service. The report also indicated that Whole Foods employees have looked at potential sites in Utah, Wyoming, and Idaho, areas I'm very familiar with, where Whole Foods does not currently have a large presence. The space is also reportedly under evaluation, or also about 45,000 square feet, so larger than a typical Whole Foods box, which probably is likely also to accommodate Amazon's fulfillment needs out of these stores. I think this goes right in line with what Laura Heller called out in the podcast we did with her last week, which is that all indications point to middle America continuing to be underserved, and Amazon, like always, gets the punchline to the joke and wants to do something about it. What I find really interesting, there's within a lot of the summaries of these articles, and I put this on our blog as well, there's a beautiful map of where Whole Foods is and where it's not, and it's completely middle America. The opportunity is just right there. You see it all from this one infographic. And what I think is really interesting about this is you have Amazon potentially taking this strategy, whereas Walmart, what is Walmart talking about? Trying to go up market, trying to be higher income. Remember, it doesn't make any sense to me, and they're coming after it in a different direction. Who are you going to bet on? I'm betting on Amazon here. I'm not betting on that strategy with Walmart.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's obviously much deeper than this, but I think, you know, all right, we're going to need to build a warehouse in one of these key cities. Like, why don't we just spend a little bit more money on the property and put it in the middle of the city and get both sides of it? I think the stores probably will look a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I also think I'd be curious how the Whole Foods brand evolves to reach a new demographic. It was built on the back of very affluent cities.
Right.
So can they transform that in a way that resonates with a different world?
But if you guys remember, Whole Foods also did their 365 concept, which was a little bit more approachable Whole Foods concept. So like think like a Trader Joe's, and you have the demand in these in middle America for organic foods, closer access to that. And then also, you know, what Amazon will likely do with warehousing so that they can be closer to people that they're going to be servicing and to expand prime delivery to 2-hour delivery across the country. I guess the only challenge I put up for Walmart is that Walmart already kind of has this territory. And so, you know, I think Walmart's argument is that they're not in the upper echelon categories. They're not getting the Amazon customers. So for them, do I think they're going to win there? Probably not.
Yeah.
But I think that for them to explore that area makes sense if you're Walmart.
Yeah, that's where I know. And I know you and I have talked about this a lot, but that's where I disagree, because I don't think that's an area that can win. And then meanwhile, I think the interesting point of what you guys just both brought up is Whole Foods is an upmarket experience because of price. Like, you know, the beautiful thing about what Prime allows you to do is then just take those prices down market and you create a beautiful experience that everyone wants regardless of income. And that's what I think they're going to do in these middle America locations.
You also do Prime for $4.99 a month for anyone who's on any sort of assistance. It's like you're discounting the most valuable product they have and getting people in, lowering the barrier to entry to just subscribe to everything Amazon.
And quite frankly, we're talking specifically about the grocery space. I mean, that's the game Target's played against Walmart for years. Like, let's offer that upscale experience. It's a little nicer to be in, a little nicer to shop, and people will come. And for all intents and purposes, it looks like Amazon might be taking that exact same strategy with Whole Foods. All right, well, that closes us up. What a great day, you guys. This was fun. Like, the lights are bright here in Minneapolis, and we are sitting right in the middle of Four Post. So a huge thank you to everyone at Four Post and our friends at Mall of America. I've got my eye on this celebrity couples match game, memory game, that's sitting right in front of me. So Ms. DeFoya, you might be playing that later on. Get ready if you're listening. But if you guys haven't been here at the store, if you're in Minneapolis, you should definitely check it out. This trend is hot, and it's cool to be a part of it. You know, essentially, you know, what is happening with pop-up retail, and how is the department store going to be reimagined? A couple of housekeeping notes as well. So we all three are out at NRF next week. So be sure to subscribe to the blog and our podcast pages if you haven't already. We've got a ton of great content next week lined up for you with companies like Sezzle, Work Area Commerce, the other checkout free option out there, Zipin, and even Social Sign-In, and much, much more, hopefully, too. We're hoping that we'll add some additional content to that docket here in the next few days. And then I also think the three of us will be sure to venture outside in New York, possibly even check out the Zola store and some of the other concepts that are out there in New York that are exciting. So stay tuned, because we will be sharing all of that content with you as soon as we can when we get back from the show. So for everyone, for Carter, for Ann, for me, as always, be careful out there.